This is Tom Fox, and I'd like to welcome you to Innovation in Compliance. In this podcast series, I will bring you interviews with some of the leading experts who are changing the way practitioners approach compliance. Although the name compliance is in the title, it's really about innovation. And I wanted to drive the conversation about innovation in compliance into the 2030s and beyond, with a focus on innovations for the compliance practitioner and the compliance professional. You want to learn how to bring your business into an innovative state and more innovative business solutions for compliance problems, issues, and concerns. This is the podcast for you. Innovation in Compliance is a production of Compliance Podcast Network. In this episode, I go in a little bit different direction and talk to Jeff Gould, who is America's storyteller, about his project of America at 250 and what has made this country so great for the last 250 years. I know you'll enjoy it. First, a message from the sponsor of the Compliance Podcast Network this month, Ethico.
In the intricate world of ethics and compliance, each second is precious, and slow case closures are more than just delays, they're missed opportunities. Enter Ethico. Our solution revolutionizes case management, cutting closure times in half and turning every challenge into a chance for improvement. Imagine a workspace where efficiency and compliance coexist harmoniously. Don't just dream of faster resolutions, make it your reality. Visit ethico.com/CPN today to book a demo and dive into our exclusive white paper by Tom Fox, The ROI of Compliance, and to try our free ROI calculator. Empower your team with the tools they deserve.
Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox, back for another episode. I'm absolutely thrilled today to have Jeff Gould with me. Jeff and I are both in the C-suite thought leader class, and we are going to talk today about perhaps my most favorite topic of all time, which is American history.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about compliance. What? What? There's one that's above that?
Yeah. One that's above that, far above that. But we're going to go through Jeff's background a little bit. So, Jeff, first of all, welcome and thank you so much for taking the time to visit with me.
Well, what a delight to be talking to you, one of the giants of podcast compliance. Maybe that should be your, it even rhymes there a little bit. But what an honor to talk to you, Tom. And obviously, your era of expertise is obviously well known because people follow you for that. But I'm really happy to talk to you about, you know, a passion of ours. And probably our listeners as well. The story of America is something we often take for granted because it's just part of who we are. We have no, we don't really have the complete appreciation about what an amazing, it is the most amazing story of governments in the history of governments. And we just don't even stop to appreciate that.
So I'm going to say ditto. And at the end of this podcast, I'm going to say Tweedledee and Tweedledum, ditto. But we're going to start with your moniker as America's storyteller. Could you tell us about your background and what brought you up to today? And then we'll turn to America 250.
Okay, so I was a disc jockey for a lot of years. And then my family needed to eat. So then I got into advertising sales. And one of my accounts was a funeral home. And then I started working for them. And they said, hey, do you want to do a funeral? I said, what do you mean? They don't have a pastor. Do you want to do it? I said, what are you talking to me for? And they said, you are a disc jockey. Tom, that was 600 funerals ago. I never kept official track, but that is a lot of stories. That's a lot of game tape. And from that came so much wisdom from the life of individual Americans. I do a Christmas show that's syndicated. I tell Christmas stories and play Christmas music. And I do an onstage show to make money during the holiday season. And then somebody introduced me at an event for veterans as America's storyteller. And I really loved that because I tell the story of Americans. And I love it because we as Americans have inherited things that are unique to us. People will say, Tom, you look like your mom, or your grandpa would say stuff like that. Americans also share inherited values, and they are at the core of who we are. So when I tell America's story, it is a history lesson, but it's also a your story lesson, because all of us have the tremendous advantage of being born in the time and place of being American citizens. And that gives us tremendous leverage. And we've seen it for almost 250 years. And for reasons that are puzzling to me, we have become, I don't know, anxious or worried. I don't know what the deal is, but people have just lost the thread of how astonishing this story is. And so I started telling it to a group of people. I did it first as a fundraiser for veterans. And people would start, they would weep. It was very, I've told stories for over 30 years. But the emotional impact is astonishing. It's like people, they said, I had no idea how much I needed to hear this. It was like I was thirsty and didn't know what it was. But when you started reminding me, boy, and that's when you know you got something, Tom.
So the story of America, I have to relate a little bit. When I first heard you talk about this at the C-suite thought leader retreat, frankly, I was taken back to the bicentennial. And I absolutely love the week leading up to the bicentennial because it was completely, totally, and utterly focused on American history. And although it's somewhat ironic that Lauren Green was one of the narrators of the best shows because he's Canadian, it brought up the manufacturing, the industrial history of the United States to life to me in a way I'd never seen. And I'm a voracious reader of books on American history. But I note you have a little bit different focus. You will certainly talk about that history, but you're talking about America today. And you're talking about why you and I, my daughter, your children, need to celebrate being Americans. My wife is a naturalized U.S. citizen, and she wants to be a part of that celebration, and she wants to learn about the history of our country. So could you tell us about America 250?
Okay, so 2 years ago, I'm at a downtown auto show. Cars rolling out. I see a 1974 Nova bicentennial colors. 74, 2 years before the bicentennial. And I thought, wow. And I thought, hold it. We're coming up on 2026. That's called the semi-quincentennial. I've heard nobody talk about that word. We are 2 years away from the 250th birthday of the American story. And to your point as a history buff, number one, we're a young country. Number two, we're a very old government. We're like one of the oldest governments that's on the face of the earth right now. It's been a tremendous run, especially considering the tremendous amount of change we've seen in 250 years. And we're 2 years away from it, and I haven't heard anybody talk about it. The phrase semi-quincentennial, I'm not seeing it. And to me, 250 years is every bit as important as 200 years. I then set up a nonprofit, and it's called AmericasStory250.org. So two S's in a row if you look it up, AmericasStory250.org. And Tom, it looks like this. I go to, there's a lot of people, and maybe in your audience as well, that are in the manufacturing business, and they have an annual meeting, and they bring a guy who talks about maybe compliance, or maybe they would talk about trends they're seeing in their industry, or maybe they'd have somebody who talk about working with different generations. And I say, you know what, for a couple of years, why don't you just hear America's story? Because that's the foundation of all of it. It's an inspirational speech, gets everybody on the same page. The best Americans are the ones who are passionate. And a lot of times those are our first generation Americans. God bless them. And then there, the other group is say, Jeff, we have a fundraiser, but we have a lot of people, but we don't have any money. And I say, great, just apply. Give me what you can. I'll come and speak anyway, because it's a great story. And so there's some people who say, Jeff, I see your passion. I don't have a group. I don't have a cause, but I have some money. Maybe you could help me. And then their donations help me keep the ball rolling. Some people are passionate about the school systems. I have a I have four daughters. Three of them are in education. My wife is a former teacher. Education is a passion of mine. One of my daughters is a history teacher. She said, "Dad, it seems to work best in 15-minute blocks." So I'd speak to the four presidents on Mount Rushmore, and then I'd have, you know, a graphic novel that I'm working on getting illustrated for about the average eighth grader. We would call them comic books, but they've changed that phrase now, with questions to follow. So some people have a passion for that and want to donate to that. And some people say, "Hey, we're getting together, the Amalgamated Chemical Association of the Southwest region. Could you come and speak to our group?" And I say, "Yeah, let me check the calendar. I'll see what I can do." So that's the plan. I just want 333 million Americans to hear the American story, to hear the things they have inherited as Americans, and just feel really energized. When people are energized, when people love a story, love, as we know, casts out fear, and then it gives vision and imagination. As Americans, Tom, we have always fought with each other, but we've always fought with each other because the story is amazing. And it's not just an inspirational thing for people who live here. It inspires people all over the world to find a better form of government and to dive deeper into what their possibilities are.
So, as I recall, our government goes back to the Roman Republic, perhaps even to the Athenian democracy, but certainly through the Magna Carta, through the English common law, through the Glorious Revolution and the formation of the English Parliament in the 18th century, 19th century. Do you see really a through line or a commentary or a common themes moving forward? Or do we really take some of the best from each of those forms?
I think that whenever you're talking about government, you're talking about, at the end of the day, what's going to work the best for the most amount of people for the longest period of time. And there was, of course, at the time of the Roman Republics, the concept of the people having a vote, and then it fell into disfavor. And then we just had that cycle of tyranny roll over and over. A tyrant person comes to power, they coalesce the power, they abuse the power. They're now a tyrant. Somebody takes over. They start the whole process over and over again. At the time of the American Revolution, we had a tyrant. At least we didn't like the way he was ordering us around. I'm talking about King George. So we, like many other times in history, we revolted against a tyrant. The difference being is that the guy who led the revolt, you get about once every 1,000 years. George Washington, when offered the reins of power, said, "No, I don't want to be that." He knew about the cycle of tyranny enough. He knew about Oliver Cromwell and how that worked out. And he said, "Eventually it'll be unfair. It'll be just another tyranny." So he said no. And he deferred to the dreamers of the time, the signers of the Declaration, the Thomas Jeffersons of the world, who said, let's try democracy out. And so you see that very rarely. They tried it. It fell apart after about 6 years. They had Shays' Rebellion, and this government they had was not very strong. And then they decided, we'll do it again. Let's get together and see if we can come up with a better form. And then they met, and the bickering started. It was really about the big guys versus the little guys. Your Virginias, your New Yorks are saying, everybody gets a vote, that's the best way. And the little states said, if we do that, then we'll never have a say, and you'll push us around, and we don't like that. And so they bickered and bickered in Independence Hall on a super hot summer's day. Finally, of all people, Benjamin Franklin, he's 81 years old. He's so frail, he has to be carried in on a litter, and he doesn't say anything. He usually writes it down on a piece of paper and has somebody else with a stronger voice say it. But in essence, this is what he says, Tom. He says, what are we doing? We finally achieved victory, and now we're in defeat. We were in this very room praying for our lives when the British were invading our country. And it worked. When we prayed, it worked. Now, here we are and an even bigger abyss. If we believe what it says in scriptures, that unless the Father is the architect, the workers labor in vain, if we believe that not even a sparrow can fall, that he doesn't know about it, then certainly he is there when empires are built. Why wouldn't we trust in him to figure a way through this? Now, he said that they should have somebody come in and pray. They didn't want to do that because it would be ruin the secret, because they were meeting in secret. And they didn't have any money to pay anybody because they had a kind of a messed up government. But it was that statement, and whether they prayed individually, we assume so because they said as much. But this is what really happened. Finally, these guys said, if we don't do this, we'll just be one more failed rebellion. They looked at a longer version and they wrote down this form of government. Now, you talked about the history of different forms of governments, and they're all pretty interesting. A buddy of mine who wrote code once for the SAP was charged with writing a line of code, and he had no idea what to do. And the deadline was the next day. And he says, I know this is cheating, but God, I am in deep trouble. I have no idea what to do. Can you please help me? Now, that's not normally a prayer that person says, but he woke up at 2 o'clock in the morning and the line of code was right there. And he put that in and he said, now, Jeff, this is what happens. Every once in a while, a code needs to be updated. That story is 12 years old, and that line of code has never needed to be changed. It's bulletproof. And the reason I bring that up, Tom, is that line of code that was written for the Constitution of the United States, for the three branches of government, for the amendments to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, all of that stuff has been bulletproof for almost 250 years. And we're right now working with Mexico, right? They got trouble. Their government is in trouble. It needs to be rewritten. Other governments have had to be rewritten. Even you look at the course of history in Europe, just think of a name and you go, oh, wait, they had a revolution. Oh, wait, they had a revolution. We have not had a revolution. We've not need to change it. It is astonishing and it needs to be celebrated.
The example I use, because I'm from the great state of Texas, is that the great state of Texas Constitution was written in 1876. In that intervening 180 plus years, we've had 363 amendments to the Texas Constitution. As I recall, the United States has had 26 amendments to the Constitution. So, yes, it is a document that has certainly stood the test of time. Jeff, how do we, and here are you and I, how do we bring the passion, the love, just the reverence of that document and what it stands for forward to 2026?
Tom, it all starts with story. I think this is a Seneca Indian phrase that said, if you tell me the facts, I will believe. If you tell me the truth, I will learn. But if you tell me a story, I will hold it in my heart forever. So when I tell America's story, I really do it just from one person talking about another person, telling that story to another person. And I say, for example, let's talk about fairness. When somebody pushes you down and steals your lunch money, you say that's not fair and you fight against that. And you inherited that from an 11-year-old boy. And then I tell the story of George Washington. His dad dies. The money goes to his half-brother, and he's in the middle of nowhere. He can't afford to go to school. He wants to join the Navy. His mom says no. His life is over before it begins, and it just doesn't seem fair. And so we see him move. He gets some breaks, of course. He gets into surveying. He then marries a wealthy widow. He gets into farming, and that's not fair because he has to sell all of his stuff to overseas markets, and he doesn't get a chance to weigh in on the price. And then he joins the revolution. He leads the revolution, doesn't take a paycheck for that. Physical danger, obviously physical danger. And then he gets all of that power. And then this is, again, we talked about earlier, he sees that also isn't fair. And so the fact that we are able to fight against unfairness. And of course, when the nation started, there was all kinds of unfairness that exists to this day. But the fact that we have the ability to fight for a more fair system, we inherited that from him. And we inherit dreaming from Thomas Jefferson. I talk about him writing the Declaration. We talk about sacrifice, and we inherit that from a poor boy who's literally dirt poor, born in the floor of possibly a log lean-to. Abraham Lincoln didn't like to talk about his childhood. But he was a guy who represents what the possibilities of this country can be, right? He went from literally nowhere to become the most powerful person in the history of the nation, maybe the most powerful person in the history of worlds, because without him, I wonder if we would have a United States. Certainly, Washington gave us the nation. Certainly, you could say that Thomas Jefferson gave us from sea to shining sea. Certainly, you would say without Lincoln, would we have a United States? And without, and the fourth president I talk about is Teddy Roosevelt. Would we have America the Beautiful because of his tremendous impact on the National Park Service, right? So these are four guys, and I always end it this way, Tom. I say, now look at the picture on Mount Rushmore. Can you see the cracks and flaws? These men were flawed men. They had cracks, some were quite obvious. But you also are flawed, and so am I. And it has never been about just our mistakes or our flaws. It's always been about a possibility. And this country stands as a beacon to that. I always end my presentation this way. We sing the national anthem. And I say, this isn't a question at the end of a poem written by an attorney a long time ago. It's not a question at the end of a song that we sing before a ball game. It's a question that resonates throughout the entire world, because in the world today, people are in tyranny. People are struggling against their own governments, and they're looking at this country and they're crying out, is the flag still there? Is the flag still waving over the land of the free, where people recognize the absolute gifts that we have and the responsibilities that go with them? And are they brave enough to cast that forward into the next generation? And you can't have a president answer that question. And you can't have a political party answer that question. And you can't have history answer that question. It can only be answered by individuals today, Americans today. And I say, if you believe that, stand up and sing it so all the world can hear and have hope in the American story.
Jeff, that seems like a perfect place to end this podcast. But before we leave, I wanted to ask you again, if our listeners wanted any more information on yourself as America's Storyteller, America 250, how they could get involved, perhaps a donation, what would be the best place or places for them to go?
I would say that if you just Google my name, that's Jeff Gould, G-O-U-L-D, you'll find me out there on LinkedIn and other places. The actual website is America's Story 250. So it's America's Story, so there's two S's in a row. It's 250 because we're coming up on 250 years, and it's organization because it's a nonprofit. AmericaStory250.org. That's the website. There'll be three little videos. The first shows a little bit of the synopsis of what the story is about 3 minutes. There's a 7 minutes with audience interaction. And then the third is a 58-minute version of the story I gave at Mount Rushmore at the National Park last year. And that will explain more fully about it. Again, I do want to say this. No story can happen without the help of one person helping another. And Tom, I just wanted to say thank you for helping with this story. It's the interest, it's the passion, it's the encouragement of people like you that have been very helpful in getting this story out. Thank you so much. God bless.
This month, the Compliance Podcast Network is sponsored by Ethico. Are you struggling with budgeting and finance requests for your compliance program? Well, I've written a white paper together with Nick Gallo at Ethico, and we've made that available. So if you'll click through on the link, you can get a white paper on the ROI of compliance and how you can use that in the budgeting process. I know you will be able to use this white paper on ROI. Are you looking for a quick way to get some ideas for an upgrade for your compliance program? Well, I have a new podcast for you, the Compliance Tip of the Day, where in 5 minutes you can find out a cutting-edge tip of compliance that you can implement or at least consider for your compliance program. Check out the Compliance Tip of the Day each day, Monday through Friday, on the Compliance Podcast Network.